A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, we speak to John Sheldon, the CMO of Smile Direct Club. Since its launch in 2014, Smile Direct Club has become a public company that is now generating well over $600 million in annual revenue and has helped more than 1.5 million people transform their smiles through an innovative approach they use to disrupt the dental alignment market. By leveraging telehealth technologies and advanced 3D printing, they dramatically reduce the cost to consumers while expanding access to the service to communities who don't currently have access to an orthodontist. John helps us understand how he and the marketing team has helped fuel the explosive growth in the company. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, John, so great to have you on the Next CMO podcast. I'm really excited for this conversation. And maybe we can set the table by having you tell our audience a little bit about you and a little bit about Smile Direct Club.
Sure. Peter, thank you, first of all, for having me on the podcast. I'm looking forward to the conversation. My name is John Sheldon. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer today at Smile Direct Club. Smile Direct Club sells aligners that straighten your teeth. And we also have oral care products such as whitening to help you get the confidence that comes from a smile that you love. I've been in and around e-commerce and direct-to-consumer businesses for almost 25 years now, since kind of the dawn of the internet, and a bunch of different angles when I was young and getting in, worked in technology, worked in through marketing, did some consulting work, but really marketing was the door that just fit for me and learned how to market in this digital age and worked with a lot of companies that were trying to do the digital transformation, try to say, what part does digital have in our ecosystem? And along the way, I've worked in consultancies, I've worked at agencies, and then I've been client side. And done that most recently for the last 4 years at Smile Direct Club, which has been really fun and interesting.
Great. And for our audience who is hearing this in audio only, you should know that John has a great smile, by the way. So it shouldn't be surprising. I assume you're a customer, either that or you've got amazing genetics. I can't quite figure out which one, but he does have a gleaming, bright, straight smile. So I'm sure you're a good advertisement for the brand. I did do a little bit of research to understand a little bit about the company. I've heard of it before and, of course, know the category reasonably well because it's a fairly hot category these days, I think. But just to give our listeners a sense of the scale, sounds like about $600 million in annual revenue, a public company growing pretty briskly, about 20%-ish or give or take year over year, a meaningful company with a very broad reach and sounds like some really great potential to continue the expansion of the business. And I suspect that in this kind of a business, especially because it's a consumer-facing business, marketing has to play a really central role in the company and driving growth overall. So tell me a little bit about how Smile Direct Club thinks about marketing and its role in the overall growth of the company.
Yeah, so the whole company is only 8 years old. And that's 8 years from Jordan Katzman, the founder, sending an email to his partner and the current CEO, David Katzman, saying, hey, do you think anybody would do this? That was 8 years ago, and now we're here. And really, in earnest, we've been around for about 5 years with marketing leading the way for growth. And for us, because we were originally a kind of disruptor in the space, coming direct to consumer as opposed to selling through orthodontists, for example, we really had to explain to people exactly how this works. And so marketing played a huge role in that process. And we also have to communicate other key points of credibility, right? We have doctors that are behind your treatment plans just the same, and we have outcomes that are equivalent, et cetera. And so marketing plays a really important role in educating consumers, in giving them the confidence to put us in their hands, if you will, but also in terms of telling the stories of consumers. Whenever you have a transformation product, and our products is a transformation product, it's the stories of consumers that betray the power of your brand the most. And so we use it for that. And whether it's putting somebody on in a TV spot or really just working through and showcasing some of the before and after photos that come through and people share with us back with prospects, prospective customers, marketing is the one that's kind of stitching that all together. What's interesting, and you won't hear a lot of CMOs say this, but actually we're going from a marketing-led organization to an innovation-led organization. And actually that transition is one I totally support and I'm excited about, because it makes the marketing all the easier because we have more to say, but also it allows us to point to improved customer experiences that we're adding to the mix that will help us differentiate even further from competitors.
It's an amazing story on a lot of levels, John. And I want to come back to your innovation kind of background and approach, because you've got a really fascinating background to me. But let's just pause a second and think about the fact that in 8 years, and as you said, really 5 years, this company went from almost zero to $600 million run rate of revenue, a public company with thousands of consumers. I just looked at some of your stats. What do you say?
1.7 million.
1.7 million smiles made since inception is the way you think about it. And clearly marketing is central. I looked at your Q1 2022 financial results infographic, which is really nicely done, by the way. I assume your team does it. And one of the key highlights is that it's 60% aided brand awareness in the US, which is pretty incredible. And again, I think a lot of people know about this category of dental alignment kind of products. But the interesting thing that you all have done is leaned into this whole telemedicine model, which does a couple of things. One, it really enables people to partake in this kind of dental care and improvement in an area where people aren't very comfortable these days, especially going into a medical office if they don't need to. But two, the geographic reach has to be freakishly amazing, because if you don't have a local dentist who has the capability to do this, you can do that through telemedicine, which is really exciting. And I imagine that has to be a big part of the growth. And of course, the other part of the value proposition is that it sounds like you're dramatically less expensive than the in-office traditional kind of approach. So it's a really disruptive idea. And as a marketer, John, which of those sort of elements of differentiation do you take all of them and package them up into the way that you communicate the value prop to the consumer?
Yeah, Peter, you hit on the big three that we launched the company with: access to care for people who never had access before. 60% of the counties in the United States do not have an orthodontist. We can service all of those. Affordability, we are 60% less than braces and Invisalign. And so we just open the market up to a set of customers that never had access to teeth straightening solutions before. And really it was about how we bring them into the marketplace. And then the convenience of telehealth. And so when we launched the business, very clearly it was more focused on that access and affordability conversation and really enabling a new set of consumers to come into the marketplace. But along the way, building a business that will service them, what we've come to understand and come to believe is that probably the right solution for 80, 90% of all customers looking to have their teeth straightened. And so we're really trying to open up the entire market. And that's where the convenience part really plays an important factor for higher household income, for parents of teens. Imagine your kid getting their teeth straightened, but you don't have to take them out of school every 2 weeks. A really wonderful way of going through the service and ending up with the very similar outcomes.
Great. That it's really amazing, John. It sounds like it's an amazing value proposition. It's got to be an exciting place to be. One thing to be helpful to understand is, give me a sense of your overall marketing strategy. What's your top level approach when you think about the marketing strategy for Smile Direct Club?
Yeah, our business was born out of kind of a traditional DR mentality, direct-to-consumer mentality. And so the critical things we're trying to do is get people to allow us to explain the story to them. And that starts with creating a brand that they can feel comfortable with and familiar with, getting them to the site where we can get them as a lead, and then using CRM primarily as a way to tell that story about how we can transform their lives, whether it's, again, an access message, an affordability message, or a convenience message. And we need almost every channel, right? We're in TV, we're in paid social, we're heavy in our paid search environments, doing things like podcasts, all that, and all the opportunities to get in front of consumers, let them know there's a new and better way to straighten their teeth, and then get them to learn more. Once they raise their hand, our CRM is incredibly powerful at pulling people through the process and ultimately getting them into aligner.
It's interesting. I'm glad you brought up the CRM, because I was going to ask you a bit, John, about your approach and your overall sales cycle, because obviously you've got a direct-to-consumer offer, but it's a highly considered thing. Even though it's much less expensive than the competition, you're still spending maybe a couple $1,000s for a service. So that's something that I suspect has a longer consideration. It's not like you're buying gum at the store. So tell me a little bit about how you think about nurturing and developing customer interest over time with your marketing strategy.
Yeah, so great question, because we actually do see people who become a lead and convert almost immediately as a portion of our customer base. But that just means they've been thinking about this that we didn't, and not with us, but thinking about this for sometimes years before they show up at our doorstep. And maybe we made something more affordable, or maybe they just came across us. Then after that, there are a lot of places for a consumer to get lost in the process today. There's insurance, and they want to find out where the doctor is, and they have to look at reviews and talk to their friends. And like 60% of people talk to their own dentists. All of these things are part of people's process. And obviously, the ways that we can shorten up that cycle, the better off that we are, because we joke often that nobody wants to eat a cold hot dog. And when they show up at the website, that hot dog is warm, but 3 weeks later, it starts to cool off. And so what we have to do is to make sure that we continue to reinforce the reason they were there in the first place. And actually, we have a smile assessment on our website that's a kind of a quiz that lets us know whether or not you'd be a good candidate for aligners. And one of the questions that we ask is a chief motivation. And we actually tailor a lot of the messaging to that transformation goal and that motivation, right? Oftentimes it's a wedding, or it's an event coming up, or honestly, it's part of a broader transformation in that consumer's lives. And so we're just trying to stay with the consumer for that reason why they were interested in straightening their teeth, and make sure they remember that, because we're primarily adults as customers. And that means that they've lived with these unstraight teeth, again, sometimes for years and years. And there's an element of, there's no necessary urgency per se. And so we have to look to find ways to create urgency for them by letting them know, hey, by Christmas, you can have that smile you love, or for that big event, or what have you. And so we spend a lot of our time in our marketing area making sure that we relate to the consumer based on what they've told us their journey is.
So it's fascinating, John. And I was going to ask a little bit about your approach to personalizing these campaigns to the customers and prospects based on their main reason for showing up. So I think that's a fascinating approach. And it's a very sophisticated approach to doing this kind of marketing. So do you break out your campaigns that way? Do you have campaigns that are about where everything from messaging and creative and strategy is about someone trying to get better smile for a big event, as an example?
Yeah, so we do that. We have some messaging specifically around big events, but typically weddings is a really big one for us. But we also, so if I was going to break down our key messaging pillars, one is just education. Even though we've been at it for 5 years, there's still a lot of people who don't know that this is the better way to straighten your teeth. And so just helping educate people about that is one group. The second is what I'll call urgency drivers, whether that's talking about events that are coming or connecting with them about a promotion that we're doing to pull them through. And then credibility. plays a huge role, right? So that's where we put our doctors forward, and they talk about why they like working with Smile Direct Club to help straighten people's teeth. And then lastly, we hit on those testimonials, and we hit them really hard and let people tell their own stories. And so it allows prospective customers to find a connection to their own story.
No, that's great, John. And I love the idea of testimonial-based marketing. I think it can be incredibly powerful, and especially when you combine it with this idea of really sophisticated personalization. So I assume then you can map these testimonials to the segment of your customer base. If you're someone getting the new smile for their wedding or someone who's going through self-improvement, can you map those testimonials and serve those up to those specific people at the right time?
Of the data, we do that. We map the stories together so that people can see themselves in these people who've already been through the process, and it gives the motivation to move to get to the other side of the transformation.
Oh, that's amazing. So it sounds like you've got a really great, very sophisticated marketing approach. I know that I wanted to talk a little bit about your background, and I wanted to ask a little bit about how you structure marketing overall. I found your background really interesting because you, early in your career, you were, I wrote in my notes, from Oracle to Ogilvy, which is an interesting transition. So early on in your career, you were more, it sounds like, maybe a technical or solutions consultant or something like that. And then you made this transition to Ogilvy in the strategy area. So talk to me a little bit about that. So how did you get your sort of your first break into marketing? Was it when you went into the agency world, and what motivated that?
Yeah, so it was actually one of the in-between steps. So when I joined Oracle, I wanted to be involved in the kind of this internet thing that I didn't know what it was. And I had been working actually as part of Gophernet, et cetera, when I was in college for the National Center on Adult Literacy, which was at the University of Pennsylvania. And so it already kind of had some familiarity with the ability, what hyperlinked documents can really do. And I got excited about that, learned a lot about it. And my wife was already at Oracle, and she said, they're asking about that internet thing you can't stop talking about. You should see if they, you know, they're looking for people who know anything about it. You should come talk to my boss. And so I went in later that week, and he said, tell me everything. It took me about 4 minutes. He said, okay, that's as much as we know. You're hired, and we're off to the races. And that was a great start. And I primarily focused on the technical side and helping create technical solutions for people that leverage internet technologies. But went from there into a kind of a product management role for a company that built e-commerce sites. And then from there moved into a consulting firm where I came in as kind of the e-commerce quote unquote expert, and they taught me CRM. And so that company is called Dialogos. And I would say that's really where my knowledge accelerated incredibly during that time. And I actually founded a company with several of the directors in Dialogos when the dot-bomb thing hit. And that company's still in existence up in Boston, a great company called Customer Portfolios, who help people with their customer data. And so that was kind of my angle. And we focused on customer marketing and email marketing and so on. And that's that used kind of e-commerce and CRM combination to open the door in working with big brands who were trying to figure out digital back when I went over to Ogilvy. And that's what I got a chance to do. And it was really fun to help those businesses to grow.
It's amazing. And I've seen this theme a lot, John, that a lot of really leading direct-to-consumer marketing executives have just a very deep technical background because of the analytical approach, the kind of systems thinking that you need to put into play to execute this kind of strategy. And even what you were just talking about with the idea of a highly segmented kind of marketing approach requires not only an understanding of consumer marketing and segmentation, but also the technology side of it to figure out how to make all these pieces fit together. Talk to us a little bit about what your overall tech stack looks like, John, for a company like yours. I know there's probably a lot to it. So just give us the high level view of what are the major components of your overall tech stack.
Yeah, just you start at the core, which is our site. Our site is a stack that consists of a tool called Contentful, which is a headless content management tool, and then Commerce Tools, which is a headless e-commerce cart. And so those two things combined are really the core of our site. And we have tons and tons of tools on there. But one of the ones that I should mention that we use a lot is a test and learn tool called Optimizely. And so all part of that kind of D2C test and learn world, we're running dozens of experiments on our site at any given time. And Optimizely does that for us. On the CRM side, really at the core is the Salesforce Marketing Cloud. And I've been working with that stack for almost 20 years now when it was ExactTarget and moved over to Salesforce. It's incredibly powerful and we use it to its fullest extent. And we use that for email, SMS, in-app messaging, and even starting to do some chat messaging as well. And lots of opportunities for us to continue to evolve and tweak that space. But it's at this point, it's a really important part of our stack and the content that we've built there. We've also tested into over the last 5 years very diligently. Elsewhere in the world, we've got reputation management tools. We've got a lot of tools. And then obviously we've got our ad stack and we're working with a number of different vendors on the programmatic side as well.
And tell me a little bit about how you've organized your team, John. So obviously you probably have a strong technical foundation to your team, but what does a team look like? Give us the general scope and scale. Obviously nothing proprietary, but it's helpful to understand, especially for some of our listeners who may not understand how you do this at this scale. What does the team look like?
Yeah, so who fits into the team today fits into four key buckets. Number one, we have an in-house creative team, and I'll include brand strategy, research, planning, integrated marketing, and the creative teams all sit in that underneath that bucket. The second is the comms team, right? So doing PR, corporate comms, crisis comms, influencer, social media, reputation management, all of that stack. The third bucket is our digital experience bucket. So that's the site, the app, and then the CRM, really the core of how that customer interfaces with our brand. And then lastly is the paid media team, the guys out spending the money in all of these different channels, helping drum up demand for the business. And so it fits into those four buckets. The team's about 100 people globally. We operate in 6 countries, but we actually manage it primarily through a centralized structure today.
No, that's great. It's really helpful to understand, or for this kind of scale, what kind of team you put together. And it sounds like they've been incredibly effective. If you look at the growth that you've achieved as a company and in a very short period of time, it seems like you guys are doing a really great job. Before we're going to have to wrap up in a couple of minutes, unfortunately, already, but I did want to pop up a couple of levels and think about one concept with you is in, again, if I go back to your financial results summary, one of the things that you talk about is the 60% plus aided brand awareness in the US. So when you talk about that, especially this is in the context of your investor relations material, how do you think about attributing value to that kind of an awareness for SmileDirect, John?
Yeah. So, Peter, one example of how that has value for our business is we can actually, even though we're so marketing dependent as a business, it allows us to do flighting and pulsing in ways that when we were younger and hadn't quite built that, we needed to be always on. And so instead now we can do a little bit more concentrating with some pulsing. It allows us to save a little bit of money on marketing and allows us to remain top of mind even when we're not screaming from the mountaintops. Having a great brand awareness number really helps the business. Actually, this year we're changing the focus away from that aided number to the unaided number. And now I want people to think of us unprompted as players in this marketplace. And there's really only one other brand in teeth straightening, and that's Invisalign. And my job is to turn this whole thing into a two-horse race. Make people think there's Invisalign if I want to spend more money and go to an orthodontist, or I can work with SmileDirect Club, get an expert doctor working with me, but I can do that for 60% less. And for, again, we think for 80, 90% of cases, we've got the superior solution. We've got 24/7 support. We've got a lifetime smile guarantee, which they can't do because they sell through channel. And again, one of the critical elements of our business model is the fact that we're full stack top to bottom. I can look at the data and know what advertisement introduced you to our brand, all the way to who made your aligners and are you wearing your retainer at night. And so the fact that we can see that top to bottom allows us to really customize and tailor that customer experience all the more fully.
Yeah, that's amazing, John. And it's funny, I was just thinking as you were describing that structural benefit you have of not having a channel. It's almost like you're the Tesla of this world, where they've been able to really disrupt the way that product gets to consumer and service can happen because they, of course, own the whole thing. And it's very similar in your model, which is really fascinating. I was going to ask, though, so as you change your shift your focus here over the next period of time from, and I love the concept of evolving beyond the aided awareness to the unaided awareness. Does that change your strategy at all as you think about your overall marketing strategy?
It doesn't change our strategy overall, although we will lean in more heavily to some of the, I'll call them the Byron Sharp type mentalities about being physically present and mentally present for your customers on a consistent basis. Your consistency of iconography and brand colors, voice, all of that. And we've done so much of that over the last time period. We've built a character in Didi in our spots that really represents one part of our story. We've been really choiceful about leaning into how we use the purple color, the blue and purple color that is our core brand color. We built an audio mnemonic that we tag so much of our work with now. And then we've really worked on putting the right level of playfulness into our voice to make us accessible but serious. And so all of that together and reinforcing that over and over again is what really helps you move from that unaided awareness number and get you, sorry, from the aided awareness number into that unaided awareness number that we're really looking for.
Yeah, you can really, it's great to hear because you can hear in the way that you describe your evolution here, John, the value of sort of brand coherence, the consistency. And I love that you're bringing the multimedia approach to your brand. It's more than just an icon, or it's a color, it's a sound, it's an experience, it's a spokesperson character, et cetera. So getting really aligned on all of that, I'm sure, is a key part of how you can successfully get to this next point where you can really drive up that unaided awareness in the category. And I'm excited to see what you do in the next year or two to drive that up. Believe it or not, John, we're actually at the end of our time. And that means I have one more quick question to ask you that we like to ask everyone. And it's, what advice would you give to current or aspiring CMOs?
So, Peter, I think the piece of advice I would give is, in all the areas of marketing that you're responsible for, work with your teams to build systems that you trust. And I don't mean technology, a system of making decisions, a system of operating the plane, if you will, right? Systems that you trust, whether it's how you're going to tweak and optimize your marketing spend, or having a clear and consistent brand book that you stay with across your marketing stack. You need to have systems that you can trust, lean into, and fall back on when you're asking hard questions about your business. And it makes bringing on talent more easier. It makes retaining talent easier. It makes decisions cleaner because you have these things that you trust and can fall back on.
Oh, it makes a ton of sense. And we think about that a lot, John, in the area of operational execution, making sure that there's just a well-defined set of systems and processes to make sure that you can turn the crank, especially as you're growing and built a function at the scale that you have. John Sheldon, CMO of Smile Direct Club, this has been an amazing discussion. I really appreciate you. You've been a fantastic guest, and wanted to thank you for being on the show, and thank you all for listening. If you have ideas about other guests you'd like to hear on the show, drop us an email or follow us on social media and let us know what you think. And John, thanks for being part of the Next CMO podcast. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Pod Forte Podcast.